This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 2nd of August 2013. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 2nd of August 2013, which this week have been edited by Fredina Hearn and Christine Aston. Your readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Karen Cream.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. At this week's announcements, we start with What's On. And the only item we found this week, in Winchester Cathedral on Tuesday the 6th of August at 1pm, there's a lunchtime concert featuring Arthur Parks on piano and cello. And that's a free concert with a retiring collection. That's 1pm Tuesday the 6th of August in Winchester Cathedral. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 2nd of August at 5:33am and begins at 8:51pm. And on Wednesday the 7th of August it ends at 5:41am and begins at 8:42pm. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. And the main headlines this week: Cathedral in £10 million lottery cash boost, County attacked for hoarding reserves, and Council's windfall in generous bequest. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Claire?
Cathedral in £10 million lottery cash boost. Winchester Cathedral has received a £10.5 million cash boost to help fund a £19 million regeneration project. The Cathedral applied for the grant from the Heritage Lottery Fund last year and confirmed it had been successful on Tuesday. Meanwhile, research will shortly begin on the bones of Anglo-Saxon kings kept in the Cathedral's six mortuary chests. The HLF funding will be divided among several projects, including repairing the roof and medieval windows, improving the education centre, revamping the sound system and lighting. It will also support three new exhibitions, including one focused on the chests, but Receiver General Annabel Boys said this grant only provides for their conservation rather than research. She said, "We are shortly to start work on the bones. The HLF only covers the conservation of the mortuary chests, but what we discover in that work will help influence the exhibition." She declined to say if the chests had already been opened and who would be conducting the research. It comes as national interest is high after the possible discovery of King Alfred's remains in Winchester and those of Richard III in Leicester. But Ms. Boys said there was no link between these projects and the cathedral's work. The three exhibitions are locating the Winchester Bible to the ground floor, Decoding the Stones, an architectural history of the building, and The Birth of a Nation, researching the cathedral's six mortuary chests containing the remains of Saxon kings. On the successful application, Ms. Boys said, "Last year I was able to say that I was delighted that we were in a position where we could realistically look forward to the day when we could fulfil some long-held aspirations for repairs, conservation and the significant enhancement of what we offer our visitors. This week I am delighted to be able to say that work can commence, thanks to this significant contribution from the HLF. Stuart MacLeod, head of HLF South East, said, "Winchester Cathedral is one of the UK's most important cathedrals, having weathered the test of time for over 900 years. A five-year programme of urgent conservation work will ensure this precious site is protected for the future." The very Reverend James Atwell, Dean of Winchester, added, "Winchester Cathedral has significance beyond the ordinary and needs to tell its story effectively in the 21st century and offer an exceptional experience to visitors and worshippers alike. The cathedral has always been about community, and this award will increase our ability to reach out, welcome, and serve the well-being of a new generation. But the cathedral is still raising money to make up the rest of its fundraising appeal, with around £5 million still needed. Repairs are expected to start in early autumn, while work on the exhibitions will begin shortly afterwards." And there's a picture of a beaming Dean of Winchester, the very Reverend James Atwell, a picture of one of the pages of the Winchester Bible, and a box of bones of ancient kings.
County attacked for hoarding reserves. Tory county chiefs have been accused of hoarding reserves which have reached an immoral £400 million while cutting frontline services. Liberal Democrat opposition group leader Councillor Keith House criticised the ruling cabinet for sitting on massive savings, the equivalent of nearly a quarter of its £1.75 billion budget, including schools. The County Council nearly doubled the sums held in reserves from £214 million in 2011 to £419 million last March, while closing two libraries, three care homes for the elderly, and slashing spending on Sure Start children's centres and buses. Hampshire chiefs admit there is cash in the coffers to fill the gap left by central government funding cuts over the next 2 years. But they argue it is more prudent to cut council spending than use savings to prop up services in the short term. Councillor House, who is also leader of Eastleigh Borough Council, said, "It is close to immoral that Hampshire is stashing away over £400 million of local taxpayers' cash." He added, "I think the reserves are excessive and can't be justified for the community." He made a plea for the council to use the cash more imaginatively than leaving it sitting in the bank. "With the state of the economy, we need to promote jobs, and with very affordable building contracts, now is the time for substantial investment in schools, roads and facilities for the future." Local Government Minister Eric Pickles said councils had significantly increased their reserves in recent years and should be prepared to use this money rather than cut services. Unions have also called for reserves to be used to save frontline services and jobs. However, the County Council says nearly half the money is already committed to projects such as road repairs, school building and street lighting. The cash is held in reserves while the spending is spread over a number of years. The council's reserves also include cash earmarked for specific purposes, such as £22 million for settling insurance claims and £44.8 million for schools, which the council has no control over. That is the combined underspend on school budgets managed by governors. A cabinet report admitted, however, there was £80 million available, which could be used to bridge the gap in the council budget left by a 10% cut in government funding in 2014-15. It went on, "Whilst it is true to say that these reserves could be used to mitigate the loss of government grant reductions, the County Council has decided to make a more sophisticated, long-term approach to the use of these resources, these reserves. Council leader Roy Perry said, "If we used reserves simply to prop up the budget in the short term, they would be exhausted very quickly." Councillor Perry said, "The £400 million savings was equal to about £300 per head of population in Hampshire, to meet every possible contingency." He said the county was proud of its record on savings, and the sum was only large because Hampshire had 1.3 million residents. Tory chiefs plan to use savings to modernise and transform services, including turning care homes into assisted living housing schemes. Plans also include setting aside £5 million for bigger payouts to staff who take voluntary redundancy to reduce the salary bill.
Council's windfall in generous bequest. £500,000 given to provide homes for the elderly. Winchester civic chiefs have been given a cash windfall in the will of a former city resident. The City Council will receive a £530,000 request this month from Harold Harris, who died in Hong Kong in August 2011, aged 86. A further £60,000 is expected when the executors have met any liabilities. One of his conditions was the bequest be used to build homes for the elderly. Council leader Keith Wood said, "This is most welcome, and we are very grateful for Mr. Harris's generosity. This could help a project that could be undertaken by the City Council or go to aiding a housing association." It is understood the Chessel Street car park is being considered as a site for elderly housing, and these funds could be used. But Kevin Warren, head of estate, said a site had not been confirmed yet and several options were being investigated. He also said, "The government has confirmed the importance of the provision by offering a grant towards the construction of a special care scheme in the city. The council has made the siting of the new home a priority and hopes to conclude this before the end of the year. Any development built with the money would include a memorial to Mr. Harris and his late wife, Yuk Sin, who died in 2006. The couple had no children." Council Corporate Director Stephen Wetnell added, "It is the second major bequest the council has received in 25 years. Born in 1925, Mr. Harris grew up in Stuart Crescent, Stanmore, with five brothers and two sisters, and attended Stanmore Junior and Peter Simmons Grammar School. He moved to Southend to work as a junior clerk, aged 16, before serving in the Royal Navy during World War II as a signalman. After the war, he joined the police in Palestine and then Hong Kong, where he served between 1950 and 1987, retiring as a chief inspector of police with several medals. His brother, Peter, 81, still lives in Winchester and said Harold was well loved by his family and had shown generosity before. Mr. Harris of St. Anne's Close Badger Farm said, "In 2008, he donated a sum of money to help the elderly at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. I don't know how much it was, but it helped with their computer system. He was very regimented, and his colleagues said he was strict, but fair. He was always seen to be fair, and was quiet and reserved." And there's a photograph of Harold Harris in his police uniform in Hong Kong.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment. Firstly, the death announcements. Announcements this week of the deaths of Beckles, John Beckles, who died peacefully on the 24th of July. Bell, Noreen Bell, née Walker, who died peacefully at the Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 85. Dykes, Iris Dykes, died peacefully in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 92. Edwards, Gwen Edwards, died peacefully on the 24th of July, aged 88. Fanner, George William Edwin Fanner, died peacefully at Flowerdown Nursing Home, aged 86. Fry, John Fry, died peacefully on the 20th of July, aged 90. Goss, Leah Goss, died peacefully at home, aged 96. Marper, Diane Carol Marper, died peacefully on the 25th of July after a long illness. Otway, Dennis Sylvester Otway, died peacefully on the 20th of July, aged 92. Page, Lillian Kathleen Page, died on the 21st of July at Willow Court. Purvis, Robert Bruce Thomas Purvis, died peacefully on the 23rd of July. Radford, Dorothy Lillian Radford, died on the 18th of July, aged 90. Taylor, Pat Taylor, died peacefully at home, aged 84. And Tucker, Richard John Tucker, died at the Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 63. And now we move on to Christian Comment, read by Claire.
This is headed, Church Leaders Echo a Biblical Concern for Justice, and is written by Terry E. Hemming. Justin Welby's attack on payday loans has generally been received well, although some questioned whether the Archbishop of Canterbury should have been speaking about matters secular. I am surprised that often people want to hear a strong moral lead on matters where the Bible has little to say, and yet are uncomfortable when a voice speaks out on subjects that are taken seriously in the Scriptures. Our attitude to money and our possessions is considered a great test of our real attitude to God. Recently, the Archbishop of York spoke out on low pay, and Pope Francis talked about the idolatry of money on his visit to Brazil. They were echoing a concern for justice found in the Scriptures, and which we, as Christians, believe echo the mind of God. Although profit is nowhere seen as a sin in the Bible, but as a sign of God's goodness in giving an increase, neither is profit seen as the main motive for our existence. The need to care for others and to be aware of their needs comes uppermost. This is true even when it comes at our own expense. So in the Old Testament, where debts were cancelled every 50 years, they were not allowed to refuse a loan because they thought they would lose out. Among the sins the prophets condemned was going to bed owing the poor their wages. One of Jesus' quarrels with the Pharisees was that they used clever arguments to keep their money rather than support their parents. If you are in church this Sunday, you will hear his condemnation of the man who built bigger barns in which to keep his riches. So why then do people not think the church is interested in our attitude to money? One reason is that we have forgotten the teaching of the early fathers and mothers and consider their position as extreme. Most folk think of the church as it was in medieval times, when it was indeed rich and powerful. Then some remember that Calvin and other reformers justified the taking of interest on loans and see this as the basis for modern capitalism. Yet Calvin argued against exploitation, and there were many voices in the medieval church condemning the avarice of the rich. Perhaps our greatest problem is that we do think the warnings against the rich and their exploitation of the poor belong to us. As the revelation of the pension fund investment demonstrated, we all need to be careful. A good test of where our heart is to ask, are we more worried about being exploited financially, or worried lest we are being unjust to others? And that was written by Terry E. Hemming.
Thank you, Claire. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Robin, start us off, please.
The first one is has the title It's Boomtown for a Good Reason, and it's from Charlie Flint of Hinton Ampner. I thoroughly enjoyed your comedy preview of the forthcoming Boomtown Festival, particularly the forecast that noise pollution will be kept within legal limits and will be significantly lower after 11 p.m. What will actually happen is this. The thumping bass will keep everyone for miles awake for every night of the festival. Calls to a hotline will be met with sneering indifference. There will be no discernible drop in noise at 11 p.m. Next December, the City Council will meet and decide rather pathetically that, despite these illegal noise levels, no action will be taken against the organisers. However, the council will tell them they are very cross with them, they are very naughty, and had jolly well better not do it again. In short, it will be just the same as last year. Charlie Flint, Hinton Ampner, Alsford.
Picture doesn't reflect reality. This is a letter from Chris Corcoran, who's the Twyford Parish Councillor in Twyford. Sir, John Mile, letters July 25th, paints a dismal picture of Twyford Meads. The lock and field adjoining had been enjoyed by local people for longer than anyone can remember. Twyford Parish Council bought this land in 1996 so the past usage could continue. The money came mostly from grants, the lottery, WCC and HCC, and landfill tax. We have restored part of the 18th century water meadow and given the old turf lock its timber side. The Wildlife Trust has repaired the towpath and rebuilt sluices. The parish council manages the land as grazing to maintain its high conservation value under stewardship. We pull ragwort, coppice willows, arrange grazing, repair fencing, and so on. As to its use, its popularity grows as Twitter and websites spread the word. In hot weather, 250 people may congregate there, almost all happy and active and with space to enjoy themselves. Although the land is private and visitors have no rights to be on it, the parish and county councils do not mind well-behaved enjoyment and our police help us in this. There is inconsiderate parking, occasional loud music and trespass on the Shawford side. The constant litter is picked up by volunteers, the City Council helping with bins on the approaches and collections as necessary. As to the dead willow trunks, should they now be cleared away, or is their use as a children's climbing frame and a picnic place worth an occasional fire? As I say, from Chris Corcoran, Twyford Parish Councillor, Finches Lane and Twyford.
This letter from Julian Walker is headed Wind Energy Not That Sustainable. Sir, the merits of wind energy is mired in claim and counterclaim concerning the complete reliance on subsidies to make it financially viable. Negative health impacts on people living within 2 kilometres of a turbine and the devastating effect on birds and bats, as both sides reference independent research to support their argument. Whatever side of the debate you sit on, what cannot be questioned is the beauty of our countryside. We all have a duty to protect it for future generations. Building 14 wind turbines near Bullington Cross will scar this beauty. I would add further words of caution. At the last estimate, there have been 14,000 plus decommissioned turbines in America. The post-operable phase is rarely factored into the environmental benefit analysis. In some cases, responsibility for their removal is unclear, and as a result, many are left to decay and pollute. To those going to southern Spain this year for your summer holidays, count the number of turbines not operating in the vast wind farms. It's surprisingly high, and is in part of a consequence of the removal of the subsidies for wind energy, which has led to reduction in maintenance. The majority of us support clean energy, but the solution needs to be sustainable in the long term. I encourage everyone to pressure local and national government to significantly increase research expenditure in producing energy from tidal sources, a totally predictable and reliable source. Julian Walker, Wanston.
And the last letter, nation needs more MPs of conscience. Sir, it is clear why Robin Ray, letters 25th of July, feels that Steve Brine should respect him, since he clearly does not respect Mr. Brine's freedom of conscience or that of those constituents who agree with him, whom Mr. Ray accuses Mr. Brine of pandering to. But he highlights an important point about Winchester's MP. By supporting freedom of conscience in the same-sex marriage vote, in the face of enormous pressure from the enforcers of moral orthodoxy, Mr. Brine reminded us of his courage and willingness to defy his party leadership. He demonstrated these characteristics most clearly by voting against the government in October 2011, when David Cameron ordered his MPs to oppose an EU referendum motion, pandering to the so-called Liberal Democrats, who are desperate to deny the public a say on the future of our democracy. 2 years on, the government has been forced to adopt a more acceptable position on Europe. Hopefully, Mr. Brine will prove to have been on the right side of history there. We need more MPs with his independency of mind. And that's from Robert Smith, Stony Lane, Week, Winchester. And if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we're going to move to historical items, and Claire's going to take us back 200 years.
Actually, it's 100 years ago.
Sorry, Claire, confused you.
It's fine. August the 2nd, 1913. Prizes for best allotments. There was an interesting ceremony on Wednesday evening in connection with the small houses that have been provided in full flood by the Winchester Working Men's Housing Society. The promoters always contemplated that the little patches of garden ground attached to the houses should be made a feature. Indeed, that the estate should as far as possible be on the lines of a garden city. In addition to the 82 houses with gardens, there are also on the estate 42 groups of allotments. An incentive was given to the tenants by the knowledge that prizes were to be awarded to the best gardens and allotments. And there was a letter to the editor. Sir, since the opening of the Cripples Hospital at Alton in 1908, no less than 650 children suffering from tuberculosis disease of the bones and joints have been discharged, cured, and able to take their places in the child life of the community. This work could be greatly extended if there were more accommodation for the nursing staff. And it is for this reason that it has become urgent to build a new nurses' home. Her Majesty Queen Alexandra has generously headed the list of subscribers to the nursing home with a contribution of £100.
And 50 years ago, August the 3rd, 1963, the title is City Law Courts Design Approved. Winchester's new £2.5 million law courts moved another stage nearer reality when a model, made at four-figure cost, was inspected by members of Hampshire County Council on Wednesday at Winchester on Monday. Without dissent, members approved the design of the new court buildings and agreed that it should be submitted to the Royal Fine Arts Commission and the Winchester City Council. One feature of the scheme is the proposed paving of the existing castle courtyard, with a broad series of steps leading down to the new area in the region of the present County Council canteen. And the second item, from 50 years ago, plans to raise the strength of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight police force by a quarter during the next 5 years have been approved. A special meeting of the police authority in Winchester on Tuesday agreed to ask the Home Office to increase the authorised establishment by 303 police officers and 55 civilians. The cost to county ratepayers is estimated at £238,500.
And I have the news from 25 years ago, July the 29th to be exact, 1988. Roman remains to be destroyed. Bulldozers move into the Brooks on Monday, obliterating 2,000 years of Winchester's historic past. Unique Roman remains will be destroyed as the 18-month excavation of the site comes to an end. Ladbroke City and County Land move in on Monday to begin building the 50 million city centre shopping complex, which will bring Winchester around 50 new shops in 1990. Winchester Ratepayers and Residents Association wants the development delayed. Winchester Preservation Trust are this week discussing reports that as much as 70% of the site has not been investigated. English Heritage is also concerned and discussed the site with its owners, Winchester City Council, this week. And a letter to the editor from the same time. Sir, one of the best views in our city centre for anyone interested in wildflowers and conservation has been the Old West Hill Cemetery. Last Tuesday, the grasses and flowers were almost at their best, with promise of many further weeks of flowering. Until Wednesday, when the poison spray men arrived with their canisters. Within hours, the whole space had been treated. Not a butterfly in sight, just wet plants beginning their slow wilt. It is untrue to suggest that sprays keep the area tidy. The way to do that is to haymake after flowering and seeding in the late summer. But no, the people we pay to look after our city ignore every plea and bypass every request. Oh, why must we do these stupid things? And why must I pay for it? And why should you?
And there's an article from the other side of the coin, really. Danebury Dig, taken from the Chronicle on August the 20th, 1971. High on the downs above Stockbridge, the pattern of life of a people long since vanished is beginning to emerge. For the third year in succession, archaeologists under the supervision of Professor Barry Cunliffe of Southampton University are excavating the Iron Age hill fort at Danebury Ring. After only 2 weeks of digging, the evidence uncovered has been so rich that Professor Cunliffe said, "I have absolutely no doubt that the more time and effort we put into Danebury, the more nationally important will be the results." The evidence that has already emerged this summer suggests that the fort was very densely occupied in the Iron Age. Students have been able to trace the plans of individual houses from post holes found in the chalk. And a number of the houses appear to have been rectangular, an unusual occurrence. Although there were plenty of the more normal circular houses as well. The houses were packed tightly together, and it seems that some of them were arranged along a street, another unusual feature of the settlement. Now we're going to move on to Chronicle comment. Robin, I think you've got that.
And the editorial comment this week has the title "Welcome Boost for a Great City Treasure." Winchester Cathedral coffers have received a huge boost by the £10.5 million lottery grant. So has the city's economy. Both will be helped by the Heritage Lottery Fund decision to invest in a five-year conservation project at one of the country's most important historic sites. The cathedral still needs to raise another £9 million to complete a range of enhancements, though. As Stuart MacLeod, head of the Heritage Lottery Fund South East, said, "It is vital to preserve this historic building for future generations." Conservation work will include roof repairs and restoring medieval stained glass windows. Cathedral chiefs also have long-held ambitions to make more of its treasures. It's easy to take such an historic monument for granted amongst those of us who live here. But tens of thousands of people travel to England's ancient capital every year, drawn by the splendour of the cathedral. Whilst here, most go on to spend their money in the shops, restaurants and other attractions, providing a boost for the city's local economy. The news from the cathedral will, in time, only make their visits all the more worthwhile.
Thank you. Now Karen's going to read first person.
Which is by Ronald Allison. The headline is, From the Olympic Stadium to Paddington. Do you remember what was happening this time last year? I'm sure you do, for we were deep into the first week of London 2012. The Olympic Games were here at last, and we were beginning to realise that they really were something rather special, as was Team GB. Many of us, though, were still marvelling at the opening ceremony, wondering how Danny Ball had managed to produce such a spectacle. How had he dared to think what a good idea it would be if the Queen could be collected from Buckingham Palace by James Bond, flown by helicopter over Stratford and parachuted into the stadium for the opening ceremony? Come off it, Danny, get real. But somehow he pulled it off and the Queen set yet another precedent for a reigning monarch. Her successors will have much to live up to. Once again, she was, to borrow a sporting metaphor, setting the bar high. It was a time, too, when, given to chatting about the royal family, folk were wondering when the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge might be starting a family. Not that there was any special rush, but when the time came, what great news it would be. Well, a year later, that time has come, and to put it mildly, the excitement was great indeed. The birth of Prince George of Cambridge and his emergence into South Wharf Road, Paddington, the next day was preceded by the setting up of an international media village outside the Lindo Wing of St Mary's Hospital, occupied, as the Times put it, by reporters from every continent except Antarctica. And that was no exaggeration. The Queen and Prince Philip's great-grandson, third in the line of accession, was carried from the hospital by his clearly delighted parents to get the first taste of his life to come. He passed with flying colours, with even the suspicion of a wave. OK, babies do that, but those in the enormous phalanx of cameras and microphones, reporters and the public, were well satisfied that young George was learning fast. But what a wait it had been for the mass media and what a test for the 24-hour rolling news channels. I know from some experience the difficulties of being live on air when nothing is happening. It can be tough for the commentators, and some are better than others. One wonderful moment caught my eye. The excellent Simon McCoy was on duty for BBC News, waiting for the family to leave the hospital. It was quite early when he was told that this would not be before 6 o'clock that evening. The story told, albeit momentarily, by Simon's face was worth 1,000 words. Oh no, not another whole day. But in the end, it was a good day to have been broadcasting live from Paddington.
Thank you. And now, with an alternative look at the news, there are a couple of items from Belgarum. Firstly, South Downs is the tops for trees. An interesting little-known fact is that the South Downs has more trees than any other national park in England or Wales. Apparently, they'd cover the entire Isle of Wight. The issue came to the fore last week when conservationists gathered at West Dean in West Sussex to discuss the health of our local trees. The ash dieback disease has yet to reach Hampshire, but the park authority is growing concerned about a renewed threat to the elms near Brighton, which had earlier immunity to the devastating Dutch elm disease. Nina Williams, who leads on woodland and forestry for the South Downs National Park, said, threats to the long-term health of our woodlands, such as Calara dieback of ash, are an immediate and real concern. It was great to see woodland owners, woodland businesses, larger estates and local councils all wanting to understand these threats and their possible impacts, and starting to look at how we can deal with them. And there's another article, How Hansard Tidies Up MPs' Ramblings. A leading county councillor and former Tory MP shed light on how speeches are polished up for posterity in the House of Commons. Speaking at the first meeting of the Health and Wellbeing Board last week, Councillor Manns revealed that it was possible to change Hansard, the official record of proceedings, after making a speech, by telling officials taking notes, what I meant to say was. But Councillor Manns said he soon learned that his English grammar sounded better if he left it to the experts. He added, and without mentioning any names, John Prescott, that's why there's a distinct difference between what is said and the Hansard record. And the last article is about the geese who laid Bishop's golden eggs. Laid to rest in a quiet corner of central London lies Winchester's most controversial gaggle. Back in medieval days, Southwark was a den of depravity in a district largely owned by the Bishop of Winchester, laying the way for the term Winchester geese for prostitutes. The bishops collected rent from those in trade, but were considered hypocrites for profiting from sin while not allowing the ladies to be buried in consecrated grounds. Today, there's a planning battle over the graveyard where the geese were interred. Campaigners are fighting to stop development of the unconsecrated grounds known as crossbones. And there's a picture of the of a cast iron sign, the Crossbones Graveyard, located near London Bridge. And it says in medieval times this was an unconsecrated graveyard for the prostitutes of Winchester geese. And at the bottom it says, the outcast dead, R.I.P. So now we continue with items of general news. Claire.
Entrepreneur Walter leaves lasting legacy. Tributes to businessman and scout leader. He was a pioneering entrepreneur and much-loved scout leader who made the impossible seem possible. Walter Hogg from Bishop's Waltham, who founded Southampton's famous Blue Funnel Ferries Company and led the popular 14th Eastleigh Scouts group for a decade, has died at the age of 84. Mr. Hogg, known to friends and family as Bill, was a founder member of the former Southern Tourism Board, a key member of the Southampton Chamber of Commerce, and helped set up the city's Institute of Sales and Marketing. But much of his spare time was taken up helping hundreds of Eastleigh Scouts, setting up the Spitfires Scout Band, the first drum majorettes, and forming the Southern Counties Band Championship. Born in Southampton in 1928, Mr. Hogg went on to join the Merchant Navy and was involved in the D-Day landings during the Second World War as a gunner on a salvage boat. He later moved to Chandler's Ford and set up Favourite Boats at Southampton's Royal Pier. This would later become Blue Funnel Ferries, a fleet of pleasure boats which offered tours of the docks and surrounding rivers and waterways. Over the years, celebrities including cricketer Fred Truman and singer Frankie Vaughan, as well as Margaret Thatcher and the Princess Royal, were welcomed on board his boats. Mr. Hogg, who lived in Albany Court, Bishop's Waltham, passed away peacefully, having suffered for some time with heart problems. His daughter, Della Cassidy, said, "He was always in the background and always made the impossible seem possible. My dad started so many things and gave so many his most valuable gift, his time. He was always in the background, always encouraging others to run with his ideas, so has never really taken credit for his achievements in life, and there are so many. And I would like people to know what a great man he was." The funeral has already taken place, and there's a rather nice portrait of Walter Hogg with this article.
Austin on the Money. Hampshire author Jane Austen will appear on £10 notes from 2017. the Bank of England made the announcement following a public outcry over a lack of women on paper money. Campaigners hailed the move as a brilliant day for women and a fantastic one for people power, after a 35,000-name petition was presented to the bank. The petition was started in the wake of the decision to put Sir Winston Churchill on £5 notes in place of prison reformer Elizabeth Fry, one of only two female selections since historical figures were introduced in 1970. The bank also announced that it is reviewing the way characters are chosen to feature on banknotes, given that its choices must command respect and legitimacy. It is inviting people to email suggestions on how it can make improvements to its selection process. The new Austin note will feature the quote, "I declare, after all, there is no enjoyment like reading," from snobbish Pride and Prejudice character Caroline Bingley. Austin was born in 1775 in Steventon and lived for a while in Southampton before settling at Chawton near Alton. She died in Winchester in 1817 and is buried at Winchester Cathedral. Pride and Prejudice celebrates its 200th anniversary this year.
Age is a barrier to treatment for breast cancer, a bid to improve care after an MP-led investigation. Older women with breast cancer are missing out on vital treatment, an investigation spearheaded by Winchester MP Steve Brine has found. Women are not routinely screened past the age of 70, its report warned, despite 15,000 breast cancer diagnoses every year in women that age or older. And, even when diagnosed, older women are less likely to be offered treatment amid evidence that some doctors write them off as too frail. Now the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Breast Cancer, led by Mr. Brine, has called for screening up to the age of 76 or even 79. It has also recommended a new assessment of frailty to ensure older patients are judged according to their health rather than age. Mr. Brine said, "We find ourselves at a watershed moment for the care of older people with breast cancer. Every year, over 15,000 women aged over 70 are diagnosed with it, yet older women experience poorer survival outcomes, in part attributed to late diagnosis. We must take action now if we are to understand why this occurs and tackle this situation head on." Mr. Brine launched the report entitled "Age is Just a Number," alongside broadcaster Dame Jenny Murray, aged 63, who was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2006. Also present was Dick Rainsbury, the director of the breast unit at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital, who said, "I think this is a brilliant idea and it's long overdue. We need to improve access to treatment for older women with breast cancer, not just surgery, but chemotherapy and radiotherapy. If a woman is 70, her life expectancy is to live to 87, so she has 17 years of life ahead of her. A lot of these older people are really healthy. If you offer chemotherapy to a woman who's fit, even if she's 80, she will go for it." Mr. Rainsbury, until recently president of Association of Breast Surgeons, said older women were more passive, less likely to inquire about new developments. He added, "We need teams of people to highlight needs of older people who will work to get information to them and assess their suitability for treatments." The idea would build on existing guidelines at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and elsewhere to assess health as well as age and ensure treatment prospects are judged properly. There are about 340,000 women aged 65 and over living with breast cancer, a figure expected to rise to 1.2 million by 2040.
Report ranks City Prison among worst in the country. Winchester Prison has been named among the worst in the country, according to a new report. The National Offender Management Service, NOMS, has given the city jail a rating of 1, down from 2, meaning its performance is of serious concern. Only two other jails are ranked in 1, and both are privately operated, said NOMS at a report out last Thursday. The highest ranking is 4 for exceptional performance. It follows an inspector's report in March, which said half of Winchester's inmates have felt unsafe, and 2 disabled prisoners were held in inadequate cells for 23 hours a day. Recently appointed Governor David Rogers, who took over the prison earlier this year with ambitions of getting the top ranking, said the downgrade was expected as it directly related to the March report. He said, "All these things are linked, and the prison rating system, PRS, is not only based on performance, but also these reports. If you get a bad report, you will get a bad performance. We already have a comprehensive plan in place, and we are dealing with issues. We are 5 months into the new reporting year, and we are doing what we can on the things we can influence. These results come out twice a year, with the next ones due in October. If our current performance continues, we will be upgraded." He added the prison has made progress on drugs problems, reducing staff sickness, and rehabilitating offenders, with 84% being released into settled accommodation. It was recently announced that Winchester would become a resettlement prison to try to do more to rehabilitate prisoners before their release. John Teese, chairman of Winchester's Independent Monitoring Board, said he was surprised at the downgrade. He said, "I'm surprised Winchester has gone down rather than up. Things seem to be improving considerably under the new management, and healthy progress is being made. The other prisons which achieved the lowest ranking were Thameside in London and Oakwood near Wolverhampton."
Marwell's latest is a rare sight. It may look like a donkey or a young zebra, but it is one of the rarest animals in the world, and it has been born near Winchester. A new Somali wild ass has been born at Marwell Wildlife, a species which is critically endangered in the wild. Born to mum Tikva, the young foal has been named Nthanda, meaning star in Tumbuka. Nthanda increases the number of a species which has been labelled critically endangered since 1996. Today, the Somali wild ass can only be found in the harsh and remote deserts of Eritrea, northern Ethiopia and Somalia. Marwell's Ian Goodwin, collection manager of Hoofstock, said, "She is doing well and finding her feet around the paddock. She is a vital addition to the EEP, that is, European Endangered Species Breeding Programme, and this is a great achievement for Marwell," he added. "The main threats that face the Somali wild ass are hunting for food and hides, habitat reduction, and competition for water with livestock. It is thought that as little as 280 of the species remain. Marwell has always been key in the conservation of this special breed, and the first ever British-born Somali wild ass was born at Marwell in 1996. And the article is illustrated with a picture of Nthanda being nuzzled by her mother Tikva at Marwell Wildlife.
Oliver's crime novel is music to his ears. It is a story about Winchester, but not quite as we know it. Author Oliver Gray has published his first novel, Xander, a crime story about an ageing musician who visits the city. Mr. Gray from Twyford said the time felt right to have a go at writing fiction. He said, "I didn't have a subject for the book, so I consulted a friend of mine who is a successful writer, Willie Vlautin, who told me to write about what I know. I thought a novel about teaching French would not be very exciting, and I don't know much else about anything else, so it had to be a book about music in Winchester. A former languages teacher at Henry Beaufort School for 20 years, Mr. Gray now writes educational textbooks, but has also published a series of non-fiction books, including a history of the Joiners Arms in Southampton. He is also well known on the city music circuit, as his hobby is promoting bands, setting up numerous gigs at the railway. His novel is set in an alternative Winchester, where an old American rocker, Corey Zander, plays the first date of his UK tour at The Station, but it all goes horribly wrong. The book is available at bookshops across Winchester for £9.99, and a book launch takes place at Waterstones in the High Street next Thursday, August the 8th, at 7pm, featuring music from Benjamin Folk Thomas. And there's a picture of Mr. Gray with his book standing in Winchester.
Something to trout about. Thousands of visitors are set to descend on a Hampshire village this weekend for an annual festival. Trout and About, which takes place on Sunday, August the 4th, brings more than 100 Hampshire producers to Stockbridge High Street, along with a host of family entertainment. It's been going since 2008 and has only grown in size, with more than 5,000 visitors last year. This year's event features two live music stages in front of the Town Hall and the Co-op, children's entertainer Juggling Jake, a farm animal petting area, craft demonstrations, and vintage farm machinery. Lucy Liddell, one of the organisers, said the festival was a boost for the local economy and also helps local organisations. She said, "It's very beneficial and is raising the profile of Stockbridge and the High Street shops. It's a positive thing for us all. We put any profit back into the local community. Last year was the first year we managed to generate cash for local causes, and we gave out around £1,500, including some to the football club and some to the Scouts." But Miss Liddell added the festival has reached its capacity now and could not expand further without relocating, which the organisers don't want to do. She added, "It's as big as it's ever going to be, unless we take it off the High Street, and that's not in our plans. I don't think it's ever going to be as big as Alsford's Festival, but we like the feel. Last year we had almost a carnival feel, with people milling up and down the street, and we hope that continues." The festival is sponsored by NFU Mutual and Steve Leaves Salad Company. It starts at 10 a.m. and will be officially opened by Janet Whiteley, Mayor of Test Valley. Free parking is provided at either end of the High Street, while Winchester-based Friends of King Alfred Buses is providing a free hop-on-off service throughout the day. And there's a flashback picture to last year's events showing crowds milling along Stockbridge High Street.
New village tea shop proving popular. A new tea room has opened in a Hampshire village shop and post office. The Nest at Barton Stacey has already proved popular with locals. With indoor and outdoor seating, owners Jim and Julia Clark say it's a great place to go for a spot of tea or light lunch, whatever the weather. Mr. and Mrs. Clark have run the village shop and post office for the past 7 years. The busy couple, who have three sons aged between 5 and 8, own the business. They moved the post office from the back to the front of the premises to make it more accessible. They then converted the vacant space into a tea room, complete with garden. The menu includes full English breakfasts, freshly baked cakes, lunches, as well as cream teas. Mr. Clark said, "It has done very well so far. We have a set menu, but also specials and food to take away. Mr. Clark said they had the idea to open a tea room after being asked many times over the years if there was somewhere to eat or drink other than the pub. The nearest cafes are 8 miles away in Winchester and Andover. And the article is illustrated by a picture of Jim and Julia Clark in their new tea shop in the village post office at Barton Stacey.
Operatic Society to mark World War I centenary. Winchester Operatic Society is remembering heroes who fought for our freedom next year. It will mark the 100th anniversary of World War I with a production of Oh What a Lovely War in November 2014. Opening night will coincide with Armistice Day, and director Suzanne Hall said she wanted to educate people about the war as well as put on a good show. She said, "The style of the play is rooted in the tradition of British music hall and parts are like a variety show. But the purpose of the play is to educate and to emotionally engage the audience with the history surrounding World War I. Around 50,000 people went through Winchester at the Morn Hill camp, and some 25,000 never came back. We are honouring a promise not to forget them. Casting does not begin until June next year, and tickets will go on sale then." And there's a picture of Suzanne standing by the memorial to the soldier outside Winchester Cathedral, holding the score of the play Oh What a Lovely War.
Plans for new health unit. Winchester hospital bosses have announced plans for a new unit to deal with GP-referred patients. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust revealed complaints were received last year from patients waiting in accident and emergency after being referred for hospital treatment by their GPs. Speaking at a trust board meeting, Medical Director Dr. Andrew Bishop said, "One of the things we are trying to do is build more resiliency in Winchester, so we do not get to the situation where frail and elderly people have to go to the emergency department, as it's not the most appropriate place for them. We are taking this forward to make sure that does not happen next winter by creating a dedicated facility for them." Dr. Bishop said problems arose last year when more elderly patients were referred but went to A&E to arrange examinations. He said the difference between the hospitals in Basingstoke and Winchester is there is a more functional unit with an acute assessment unit in Basingstoke. Donna Green, chief nurse, added, "We're talking about issues with the environmental setup rather than clinical care. We want patients to have a dedicated, purpose-built facility rather than go to areas that do not function as well."
BID out of pocket as firms fail to pay up. More than 100 businesses still to pay levy. More than 100 Winchester City Centre businesses are in arrears in paying their Business Improvement District, BID, levy, it has emerged. According to City Council figures, 123 traders have not yet paid, leaving the BID around £85,000 short of its £485,000 total. Professor Chris Turner, BID Executive Director, said the number was higher than usual, but was due to a large number of businesses closing. "It's slightly higher than what we would expect, but not by much," he said. "It's about 12% of our membership, but we will find out the final amount of non-payers in September, and we expect it to be much less, perhaps around 20. We have already had to write off money from businesses that have gone, like Clinton Cards, JJB Sports, Blacks and Jessop's, as they are bills that cannot be paid." He added, "The BID had reserves to cover any funds lost from defunct businesses. The levy is calculated on a business's rateable value, and Professor Turner said Winchester's major chains, which usually pay the largest sums, have paid up. He said most of these businesses still to pay are the small players who owe the average levy of around £220. The national chains tend to pay very early on. But some independent traders have raised concerns about the performance of the BID and value for money. Cat Brandwood, director of Toscanaccio in Parchment Street, said, "We have paid the levy, but there have been some issues relating to the BID not getting our concerns back to the council to get things sorted. For example, look at the fire at Phase 8. Businesses in Parchment Street have been complaining for years about the external bins as fire hazards, and BID said it was lobbying the council, but did not get anywhere. I had to go to the council directly about it on behalf of businesses because we were fed up with nothing happening. Changes need to be made to support independent businesses." Simon Scantlebury, who runs World of Beads off Parchment Street, added, "I paid my levy because I don't want to go to court, but I don't think the BID has any idea of what it's doing. The biggest problem at the moment is the market. People get absorbed with the market and do not go down the back streets, which is a massive problem. The BID does little to help direct people to the back streets." A city council spokesman said a formal reminder to pay the levy would be issued, but he expected the final number of non-payers to reduce dramatically. "It is important that we follow up with all the businesses that benefit from the BID in order to be fair to those that pay the levy willingly and on time. Those who do not pay would ultimately receive a bailiff's letter and be taken to court later in the summer."
Roads closed in city for Criterium bike race. Police have warned motorists to expect delays during a cycle race in Winchester later this month. The Winchester Criterium is due to take place on Sunday, August the 11th, and include the High Street and the Square in the late afternoon and early evening. It will result in the Broadway being closed completely between 8 a.m. and 9 p.m. Road closures will also include St Thomas Street, Simmons Street, the Square, Market Lane, Market Street, Little Minster Street, King's Head Yard and the High Street from noon to 9 p.m. Drivers have been asked to use car parks located around the city, as parking around the Square and Market Lane will be suspended for the whole day. Delivery drivers will also be affected by the changes, and all vehicles must be removed from these car parks by 11 a.m. before the race is due to start.
Strictly speaking, dance floor wasn't up to scratch. Winchester Guildhall has apologised after a dispute over the condition of its floor. James Wilkes and wife Rachel have been attending Dance Yourself Dizzy events at the cathedral for 10 years, but were upset last month when they were unable to dance properly due to a sticky floor in the Bapsey Hall. Mr. Wilkes said, "Women wear special shoes so they can spin on it, but it was horrible. We heard there had been some sort of food fight there the night before, and the man who runs it had promised it would be clean, but it wasn't. It usually goes on until around 11 p.m, but we gave up early and left because it was not enjoyable." Mr. Wilkes of West Tysted, near Alsford, added there had been similar problems at the hall before. He said one guy even said he was going to do a petition about it. Danny Foyle, who runs Dance Yourself Dizzy, said there were some issues with the floor, but it did not stop activities. He said the issue was raised with the Guildhall team, who have apologised and confirmed they will make sure the room is cleaned to the standard we and they would expect in the future. "We have used the Guildhall for many years without problems and look forward to continuing to do so. A council spokesman confirmed the apology after a small number of complaints had been received. He added, the room was not cleaned sufficiently well following a previous event. The Guildhall has reviewed its cleaning regime to prevent this happening again. The venue stages hundreds of events every year, with many satisfied clients and customers.
More care homes set for closure. More than 100 shocked elderly people have been told their care homes are under threat of closure. Council chiefs propose shutting 4 homes at Nightingale Lodge in Romsey, Cranley Paddock, Lyndhurst, Deeside in Basingstoke, and Bulmer House, Petersfield. Some 121 long-term residents, some with dementia and physically frail, would lose their homes, and 190 jobs axed under the proposals. Council bosses said it would cost more than £10 million to modernise the homes built between the 1960s and early 1980s. Problems include small bedrooms with no space for hoists to lift disabled residents. The Conservative-run council says demand for residential care is falling as more people want to remain independent.
Roman wall conquered. It was a 24-hour challenge with no sleep, but Broughton fundraiser Marcus Dunbar, 51, completed a cycling and walking marathon along Hadrian's Wall with time to spare, raising around £1,500 for Marie Curie Cancer Care. Mr Dunbar, who is head of sales at Legal & General, trained for the fundraiser on rural lanes in the Test Valley. He was joined on the challenge by 17 of his work colleagues, and together they completed the gruelling 106 miles between Carlisle and Newcastle in just under 24 hours. That's 88 miles in the saddle and 18 miles over rugged terrain on foot. Mr Dunbar, who's married with 3 children, chose the charity because his late mother, Pamela, was cared for by its nurses in her final days.
Good weather is the icing on Mayor's cake. The fear was that torrential rain would wash out hopes of a success for a cake sale organised by the Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester. But the gazebos in Cathedral Close were only needed to keep the sun off the scores of cakes sold on behalf of Ernie and Barbara Jeffs. A team of helpers from the Royal British Legion Women's Section manned the stalls on Saturday. The local barbershop choir, the Tudor Roses, also serenaded the proceedings. Councillor Jeffs said, "It was a good day, we were lucky with the weather and were busy all day, and we hope to have made lots of money for our 3 charities. This year, the mayoral charities are Hounds for Heroes, Network Scouts, and the Countess Mountbatten Hospice." And there's a picture of the mayor and mayoress, Ernie and Barbara Jeffs, with volunteers and supporters.
Is it time to ban Chinese lanterns? Chinese lanterns may look spectacular, but they pose a severe fire risk and danger to animals, says the New Forest National Park Authority. The organisation says the flying lights, which can float great distances, can set fire to thatched cottages and hay, as well as causing harm to wildlife and livestock. NPA Chief Executive Alison Barnes said, "We've long been concerned, and a recent huge fire caused by one in the West Midlands has confirmed our fears. With dry heath and the impacts on ponies, we wanted to renew our call for vigilance." Graham Ferris, chairman of the Commoners Defence Association, said, "We're totally opposed at any time, but releasing them now, we've seen the consequences and recognising the risks to the New Forest hay crops and barns, and young foals would be criminally irresponsible. Verderer's clerk Sue Westwood added, "Some lanterns are made of bamboo, which splinters and could injure a calf or foal. A low-flying lantern could scare animals into bolting, resulting in a traffic accident. Tony Hockley of the New Forest Equine Association said horse owners were also concerned. He said, "Haymaking is underway, and the risks of fire and bits of bamboo or wire ending up in our hay are very serious concerns. The consequences of animals eating them can be fatal."
Winchester University is safest in the region. The University of Winchester is the safest for crime in the southeast, according to new research. It was ranked first for safety out of 17 universities in the region and the third safest in England and Wales behind Aberystwyth and Durham. Professor Elizabeth Stewart, Deputy Vice-Chancellor, said, "We're delighted to hear it's been recognised. The safety of our students is of paramount importance and we're proud to be located in an area which boasts low student-related crime rates." Compiled from police data, the Complete University Guide selected the three crimes most relevant to students: burglary, robbery and violent crime. From May 2012 to April 2013, it looked at the annual reported incidents per 1,000 residents within wards or electoral divisions, of which parts are within 3 miles of the main campus. The overall ranking is based on the cumulative rate of all three crimes.
People are living longer in county. People living in Hampshire are among the most likely to live to a ripe old age compared with the rest of the country, according to a new survey. Figures released by the Office of National Statistics show people born today in the county can expect to live well into their 80s. But health chiefs warn more should be done to root out inequalities between towns, cities and neighbourhoods within the region, where some people are expected to die 3 years earlier than their neighbours. For example, men in Winchester and the New Forest live on average to 81.8, while those in Southampton make it to 78.6, below the national average. The figures come in the wake of a leaked government report which revealed thousands more elderly people died last year in Britain than expected. Up to 600 more people died every week, mainly in poor areas, with women aged over 85 accounting for the largest fatalities. Life expectancy in Hampshire is 80.8 for men, 2 years above the national average of 78.8, and the highest in Britain behind neighbours Dorset, where men live to 81.1. Meanwhile, women in Hampshire are living until 84.2, older than the national average of 82.4, the fourth highest in the country and nearly a year behind the 85.1 average in Dorset. The figures, based on 2009 to 2011 mortality rates, also show that both sexes are expected to live 3 years longer than a decade ago. Southampton's men are outlived in all other Hampshire Authority areas apart from Portsmouth, where they are expected to die at 77.7. Councillor Tony Coates, Winchester City Council's portfolio holder for housing services, health and wellbeing, said a number of factors could explain the disparity between Winchester and other towns and cities in Hampshire. "I think the fact that people live longer means we're doing something right in Winchester. But I remember from previous studies that the life expectancy on some of our estates was less than in rural areas. But through our health and well-being initiatives over the years, we have done a number of smoking cessation campaigns, for example, and encouraged people to be more active," he said. "I think you can understand that in Southampton, there will have been a lot of people in the shipping industry who have been exposed to asbestos, and you'd expect that to be the same in Portsmouth," added Councillor Coates.
Hospice to offer more home services. Naomi House has introduced a major expansion of its services. The Sutton Scotney-based Children's Hospice is launching a comprehensive community-based respite service for children with life-limiting and life-threatening conditions. It comes after families told bosses they would benefit from high standards of care within their own homes. Chris Robinson, chief executive, said, "We know from many families that help in their own home is rarely practical and helpful. This is the next logical step in our development. We want to work with existing local services, be they from the NHS or other delivery agents, and work in partnership and collaboration wherever possible." He added, "It is an exciting time for Naomi House, as we look at a number of ways to further enhance the valuable service we offer children and their families. Naomi House already provides emergency and end-of-life care as part of its hospice at home service and has run smaller scale community initiatives in the past. Initially rolling out in Hampshire, it is expected the service will soon be offered in Wiltshire, Dorset, Berkshire, West Sussex, the Isle of Wight and Surrey. Bosses eventually hope to be in a position to offer a similar service at Jack's Place, which cares for teenagers and young adults. The hospice will begin setting up the scheme this financial year by recruiting a dedicated team and will be working closely with prospective delivery partners such as the NHS and local authorities."
20-mile-per-hour trial zones rolled out. Civic chiefs have given the green light for 20-mile-per-hour pilot schemes to be rolled out across the county. Residents in Stanmore, in Winchester, will be amongst the first in Hampshire to trial the reduced speeds, along with Cherbourg Road in Eastleigh and Medstead near Alresford. Highcliffe and Winnall will also be subject to further pilots, though these have been agreed by Winchester City Council under separate government funding. Almost 11,000 questionnaires were sent to residents about the scheme, with more than two-thirds responding favourably, ranging from 67% in Hart in North Hampshire to 91% in Fareham. Councillor Sean Woodward, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said, "The decision is an important step in establishing the viability of reduced speed limits in residential areas. If the trials are successful, there is the potential to introduce similar schemes in other areas across the county. The new limits are being trialled to directly address the concerns of local communities. We are only taking forward schemes where we have seen a positive response from local residents. Their backing is vital if the new limits are to have an effect." Critics argue that 20-mile-per-hour limits are a waste of money and do not cut accidents, as they make some road users complacent. The scheme will also be introduced in selected roads in Whitchurch, Andover, Farnborough and Hythe.
Sutton Scotney, South Wanston, Micheldever. Controversial plans for a burial ground in South Wanston could be dead and buried. The parish council failed to meet a tight deadline for exchanging contracts for the land off Goldfinch Way because of unresolved issues over vacant possession. Parish chiefs say the issue was further complicated by a serious breach of confidentiality after details of the contract were sent to a local resident. The scheme to spend about £100,000 on a new burial ground sparked a row in the village, with Goldfinch Way residents protesting that it would reduce property prices if hearses drove along their road. They also accused the council of secrecy. Other critics said the public money would be better spent on the young, for example, building a new sports pavilion. But the parish council, local clergy and funeral directors argued that the village needed its own burial ground.
Rugby player hopes new venture will be scrumptious. The England rugby captain is the latest high-profile name to want to open a business in Winchester. Chris Robshaw has teamed up with best friend and former Hampshire cricketer Kevin Latouf in a bid to open a coffee and wine bar in Jury Street opposite the Discovery Centre. The pair, who are both 27 and met at Millfield School, say black, white and red will fill a gap in the market for high-end coffee and wine. Mr. Latouf said, "We're a new concept in wine and coffee. I've got a site in Bishop's Waltham, Josie's, and now we're taking it to another level. Chris and I have been best friends since we were 13, and he comes down to Winchester quite often. He's got a bit of a fascination with coffee, food and wine, although I've probably put that on him," he said. Mr. Latouf, who lives in Chandler's Ford, said the venue will employ 15 people, having hired 6 so far, all from the Winchester district. The application for a licence went to Winchester City Council 2 weeks ago. If approved, it will open in early September. In recent years, Winchester's reputation as a culinary hotspot has gathered pace, with celebrity chefs Jamie Oliver, Raymond Blanc and Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall setting up or about to set up eateries in the city.
Young and old encouraged to get active. A year on from the Olympics and Winchester Sports Centre is encouraging families to get active. The River Park Centre offered a free sporting fun day last Saturday where the young and not so young had a chance to play lots of sports including handball, tennis, basketball and football. The event was organised along with the City Council sport and physical activity team. Children aged up to 16 are advised to be active for 60 minutes a week to burn off calories. Adults should get their heart beating faster than usual for 150 hours a week. And the article is accompanied by a picture of lots of children jumping up and down with tennis rackets looking very happy.
MP does the honours at new office opening. Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, has opened its new look office. City MP Steve Brine did the honours at the centre in Parchment Street after a 3-week refurbishment. It now provides more space for business meetings, including a conference room and sofas for informal gatherings, while people are also able to drop in to do work. Catherine Turnus, BID manager, said it's been a real transformation and it's so nice to have this place looking like a real business centre. We have had quite a lot of interest so far and have been networking with other groups to get the news out. This gives out a professional atmosphere for meetings that you don't get in coffee shops where people often tend to go. Mr. Brine added, "Things like this and the much-discussed business charter are not gimmicks. They are support for business and a cracking thing for Winchester. This business centre is a no-brainer." The launch party was attended by several city businesses as well as Hampshire Chamber of Commerce. And there's a picture of MP Steve Brine about to cut the tape.
Olympic legacy inspires sporting events for youngsters. Sports fans spent the weekend basking in the glory of last summer's Olympic and Paralympic Games. A year on from the start of London 2012, several events were held to honour the anniversary last Saturday. A community games event, designed to be a mini Paralympics, was held at Toynbee School in Chandler's Ford, while boot camp sessions were held at Fleming Park Leisure Centre in Eastleigh as part of a family fun day. Organised by charity Youth Options, the mini Paralympics were attended by Katie Kemish, who won a gold medal in the National Boccia Championships. The event also marked the launch of a new Boccia Club, which will run every week. Boccia is a Paralympic sport similar to pétanque and bowls. Athletes throw, kick or use a ramp to propel a ball onto the court, aiming to get closest to the jack. And the article is illustrated by four pictures of young people playing various sports, from tennis, cycling, football, and bouncing on an inflatable ball.
MP backs training firm's job boost. A Hampshire MP is supporting Winchester job seekers in their search for work. Sir George Young, Conservative MP for North West Hampshire, recently visited training company A4E at its base in Regency House, St Clement Street. The company helps a variety of people on the work programme, including prisoners and ex-offenders, and also supports locals looking to set up their own businesses. After the visit, Sir George said, "I was impressed by the commitment and enthusiasm of the staff and their success in helping those out of work back into employment." Liz Clark, A4E business leader, added, "It was a very positive visit and a great chance for some of the job seekers we support to speak directly to their local representative about their experiences." A4E is delivering the work programme on behalf of the Department for Work and Pensions and Job Centre Plus. The programme is part funded by the European Social Fund.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Fredina Hearn and Christine Aston. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Claire Porter.
Bye.
Robin Freeman.
Bye.
And Karen Cream.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.